Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to this edition of Hometown Heroes. I hope that your Thanksgiving was just as enjoyable as mine was, and how much do we have to be thankful for in this country? A tremendous amount. The greatest country in the world. I think that most of you will agree with me on that. And I hope that when you gave your thanks on Thursday, before or after you enjoyed the turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes, I hope that you took time to give thanks for the men and women who have kept our country free through their service and sacrifice around the globe, both now and in the past. And what we focus primarily on in this show are those who in the past put their lives on the line for our freedom. We focus primarily on World War II, and we'll continue that today. A full hour right on up until 5 o'clock as we're back to our normal schedule. We had an abbreviated version last week and enjoyed the visit with Bill Begley, Wild Bill Begley, the Bataan Death March survivor. So far, what I've done with this show is had the same veteran on the radio as we featured on TV later in the evening. That's going to be a little bit different this week. On CBS 47 tonight at 6, you'll hear from Mike Kerkorian, a Pearl Harbor survivor who's now 91 years old, had some incredible experiences, and will tell you about one of his heroes, a Medal of Honor winner who was on his ship at Pearl Harbor. So that'll be on TV tonight at 6 o'clock. But in this hour-long radio show, we'll talk with a man who's been part of that series in the past and one of the more memorable stories from the series, if you ask me. And I'll give you just a little bit of background. I started following World War II veterans around and catching up with them, trying to capture their stories for history's sake about 3 years ago. And early on in that process, I had the opportunity to speak to the downtown Fresno Rotary Club. Got done with that presentation and talked to several people afterwards, and one gentleman came up and said, you know, this was my dad. He was in the war, and he wrote some letters to his church newsletter while he was over in serving in the war. He was a medic in Europe, and he wrote these letters back, and would you be interested in reading them sometime? I said, sure, and I looked forward to it, and little did I know how special of a story it would turn into, because once I actually got a chance to read some of this work and read what Dr. Stan Lindquist had sent back to the States to try to encourage other servicemen, it was really remarkable, and you'll hear a little bit of that a little bit later in the show. The reason I have him on today, he has now published those letters in a book. It's a great cover, great artwork on this book. It looks really good. It's a very easy read, and it's broken up into each devotional, if you will, that he sent back from overseas, trying to encourage other servicemen of like faith during World War II. It's called Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat, and a little later in the show we'll tell you how to get that. But right now, let's welcome aboard Dr. Stan Lindquist, or PFC Stan Lindquist, as he was when he joined the Army back in 1943. Did I get that right?
Well, I was in PFC for 6 months.
Well, yeah, you had to earn that first. That's right. And, well, you thought you were going to have to go in earlier than 1943, but Uncle Sam actually cut you a little break, didn't he?
Right, sure did. I was all set. I was interviewing at the draft board. My number was very low. I think it was 76. And they wanted to know how I felt about going in. And I said, well, I obviously didn't feel good about it particularly, but I was ready. However, my wife was pregnant, and we had already lost one child at 3 months, and as her three-month period was going to be coming up in a couple of months, so I asked if I could be deferred for 2 months at any rate, so that we could get over that hump. And they instead said, no, it's really a perilous time up until it's finished. So they deferred me for 1 year, and I was real happy for that. So I went home to tell Ingrid, and she was really pleased, too.
I can imagine she was. And you made your home in Kingsburg at the time. Your father had been a church planter, a preacher, and the founder of many churches across the country, including the one that today is known as the Bridge Evangelical Free Church here in Fresno. I know that your father was the one who started that church. So there you are in Kingsburg, and eventually that deferment ran out, and you had to do something for Uncle Sam. And they found out that you had a little bit of experience as a food inspector with the Department of Agriculture. So what did they decide that made you qualified for?
Well, one of the things that I had done in between, I was teaching school ordinarily, And during the summer, I decided to get another job and earn a little more money. And this was a inspecting the plants and the packaged foods, especially raisins and fruits of that sort, dried fruits. And so then in doing that, part of our job was to inspect the facilities and be sure that they were clean and checked on the operation of it to be sure that it wasn't any contamination. And so then the captain happened to see that I had been doing that, and he thought, well, the captain of the medical corps, that is, and he said, I think we should have him to come with me, because when I inspect the kitchens, he'll have had some experience about inspecting. So that's how I got in the medical corps.
As if anything can really be sterile in a war zone, huh?
That's the truth.
So Dr. Stan would be, he wasn't Dr. Stan yet, he was Stanley Lindquist, and he did become an Army medic. And it wasn't too long before they put you on a ship heading across the Atlantic with more people on that ship than in your whole hometown of Kingsburg.
Oh my, many, many, many times more. And we were on the Queen Elizabeth, which was taken as a troop ship, and in my cabin, there were eight or nine of us in a cabin that was supposed to keep just two people. We were in bunks and triple bunks and sleeping on the floor, and it was really quite an amazing operation. But we went relatively fast, and because we went fast, then we didn't have the same escort that other slower troop ships had, because we could outrun the submarines in case they ran into them. So that was an advantage certainly in itself.
Now, obviously, you had no idea what to expect once you actually got there, but what was your mindset like? What was your outlook? Here you are leaving behind a wife and a young baby at home in Kingsburg, heading halfway across the world into a war zone. What was going through your mind at the time?
Oh, boy, that's kind of hard to recall. To me, I felt it was kind of a hopeless situation, really. And I just decided that what I was going to do is just do the best I could and take what came, regardless of what it was. If it was difficult and fearful, fine. Well, then we'll do what we could do with that. If it was just ordinary kind of routine work, I'll do that. So I'd sort of resigned myself just to exist, really, is what it amounted to.
At some point, it hits you, though. I'm in a war. This is real. And this isn't a game. What was that moment for you? When did you realize this is the real thing?
Well, I think when I hit the troop ship, I realized that was the real thing, because now I was on the way over. There wasn't any more waiting time. We spent days and days on the plane and train to get across country. And one thing that amazed me was that at every stop we made in the middle of the night or whenever it was, there was always people, and they had coffee and donuts and things of this, cookies, all homemade for us. And how they ever figured out that we were coming through is more than I could figure out. But it was sort of a nice treat anyway.
Good thing they didn't tell the other guys that you were coming through. We need to hit a commercial break here in just a few moments. We're talking to Dr. Stan Lindquist, who recently celebrated his 90th birthday just a couple weeks ago, and he is still going strong. You may know him from all his work in the community throughout the years, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And let me say just a little bit about these letters from Private Buck that are now in the form of a great new book that you can get your hands on, and I'll tell you how a little bit later. Your son, Brent, who you're very close to, who lives here in town, didn't know for years and years that you had written these letters during the war, and there's dozens and dozens of them. You sent them back to your wife, and they're published in the Evangelical Beacon and sent out all over the place to men in the service. He finds out more than 50 years later and is blessed by them, and now I know a lot of other people are too. But tell me, before we hit this commercial break, why did you decide to start writing these? Was it for your own personal spiritual growth, or did you feel a call to encourage others, or what was the genesis for that decision?
Well, really, I was sort of requested to do it by the editor of our paper, of the editor of the serviceman's page. And then I thought, well, that would be a great chance for me to at least interact with other people And hopefully my experiences and my faith, which I had in God, could be transferred and helped the other folks too, in case they didn't have that faith, and help them to learn how to deal with situations that were life-threatening in a way that was more positive and helpful. So I suppose that would be the motivation to do it.
Well, and I'm sure that it did touch many people then. I know that I've been blessed by reading through it, and I think that you at home, if you end up with a copy of this book, Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat, that you will feel the same way about it. We'll talk more about that later. We'll come back and tell you what the things that Dr. Stan Lindquist saw and experienced, what happened to him, and how close he came to not coming back to have this book published today. All that and more when Hometown Heroes continues on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, sitting here with one of my heroes, Dr. Stan Lindquist, and I'm going to explain more of why he's one of my heroes. Well, he served our country and put his life on the line for our freedom. I think that says enough. I'm telling you about his new book, Letters from Private Buck, and most of this was written more than 60 years ago. Called Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat. These are things that he sent back to the States and to go out to servicemen around the world to encourage them in their Christian faith. And it is from a Christian perspective, but I think even if you subscribe to another religion, if your beliefs are a little bit different, you might enjoy this book and getting inside the mind of someone on the ground in combat during World War II, see some of the things that he saw and see things through his perspective. And I want to quickly here read you a little excerpt. This is from actually after combat had ended, but one thing that Stan sent back for that series of epistles, if you will. He wrote this on September 11th, 1945, and it starts, "On VJ Day, a man offered up a prayer in which he expressed thanks that with the war over, we could, quote, return again to normal living. I thought of George. He would never return. His beloved family would never be the same without him. Return again to normal living? Hank, blind because of a mine explosion, was destined to live a life of darkness, getting used to living in a media where his only guide would be the arm of a friend, the tug of a devoted dog, the tapping of a cane. Return to normal life? Hal, his face completely disfigured so that one could hardly determine what were his features as a result of a plane crash. Return to normal living? Mac, who lost a leg in the Battle of the Bulge, to return to any kind of normal living would be a matter of constant adjustment and hardship. Return to normal living? Those of us who were not blighted in quite that way, but who have given a portion of our lives to our country's preservation, and who, because of horrible experiences, can never be the same, can we return to normal life? My heart cries, no, there can be no return to normal living. There must be a return to living in a way which justifies the time spent and the work done, which can be justified to those who gave their lives to keep our country in the way it should be, which can in some measure help those who are permanently maimed. What way can be better than to purpose anew in our hearts that we shall serve God as never before? We shall live so that others can see that Christ means more than an easy road to keep from going to hell. We shall devote that portion of our life which God says to spend in His service anew to the great ideal of walking in His steps." So those were the words of wisdom from Private Buck back on September 11th, 1945, part of this new book, Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat. And Dr. Stan, before I ask you, I think that says enough for those sentiments. I don't think you have to explain what you were thinking there. But you weren't just speaking hypothetically there. You experienced a lot of that. You witnessed that. And before we get to your injuries, tell me a little bit of the things that you saw early on, because you are an Army medic. You're on the front lines. You're tending to guys who've been shot, who've been blown up, guys who are dead, guys who are almost dead. How did you handle that? Tell us some of the things that you saw and what got you through it from day to day, because I can't imagine how difficult it must have been.
Well, there are so many times that things have happened that have created problems that were problems to us. And after a while, you get a little bit used to that. You never get really used to it, but at least it doesn't hit you the same way as it did the first time. And I remember one time as when I was out, I was always an early bird, and I always got up before most of the other soldiers did for some reason, and I guess I'm just my farm home living started me that way. I guess that's all the only reason I can expect it or express it. Anyway, and I was walking around and I saw a lot of slit trenches, trenches that were flat. They weren't very deep, but they were long, so we could lie down in them, and then you piled dirt in front of you so that hopefully if the shots were coming, they'd go over you. And in this one slit trench was a soldier, and he was absolutely still, and I didn't know whether he was awake or what, and so I shook his shoulder and discovered that he was dead. And all he had on his wound was a little nick in his steel helmet, where a piece of shrapnel had come from above and penetrated his brain and killed him immediately. And his buddies had to move on for their job, obviously, and they left him there. The detail, grave detail, hadn't showed up yet. But that really struck me real hard, because here we were doing things that we were told that would save us, protect us, and here he had done everything right, but it didn't work out. And so I began to see, well, how does this work in with God's plan for our life? And I think that it began to reinforce my feelings that, well, I'm either going to get it or I'm not. And I might as well just go ahead and do the best I can and try what I could. And this really became important for me at one time when we were bombed by our own planes. And they hit our ammunition bump. The reason was that we were so far ahead of the where the battle lines were supposed to be that I guess the pilot must have thought we were German troops. I don't know how he could get us mixed up with that, but because our vehicles were different. Or maybe he was just unloading his bombs because he didn't want to go back with them on. And at any rate, he bombed us on the hill, and it happened to be our ammunition dump. And it just created hell on earth. And I was told, hey, go in there and see if there are any guys living and see if you can't pull them out. And I don't know, the shots were coming from every direction. It's much worse than if they're aimed, because you don't know where they're going. And then the big shells would blast every once in a while, and powder kegs would burn, and all. It was just a horrible mess. Well, anyway, we picked our way through it, and we got burned a little bit. I had asked one of the fellows there to take the other end of the stretcher in case we found somebody. And I remember one fellow especially, the first one I came to, I thought, well, I'm going to get him on this stretcher, and then we can get out quick. That'd be a way to get through this. But I took hold of his hand, and the flesh, I mean his arm, and the flesh just pulled up. He was just totally cooked. It was just really a shocking thing. But we went through, and there were a lot of men sitting in their trucks. It was the ammunition trucks. They looked as if they were alive, but they were all dead. They were all absolutely burned up, or smoke inhalation had killed them or something. And finally, we had a chance then to turn around, and we threw the stretcher down and took off, and the way we couldn't go back the way we came, because it was all burning, we couldn't get through. So we finally found a way and got behind some rocks where we protected a little bit, and we managed to get out. And I really felt that somehow God was with me and us, that we were able to get through that and be able to do it in the first place, because that was a scary situation to get into.
You know, I talk to so many veterans who say that those kind of images stick with them.
Mm.
Is that something that you've tried to get out of your mind and can't, or have you been able to compartmentalize or deal with it?
You know, I think I've written about this, so that in fact the appendix, one of the appendices in the book is this particular story. I think that helps a lot. but also the fact that you know, if you feel that God is with you and he has protected you, that gives you some sort of reassurance that goes beyond. And every time you remember it, it just, you hopefully say, well, thank goodness for that, or thank God for that. Only one time was I really had a bad case of reintegration, that's sometimes called. We were living in Chicago. I was going to the university there, the University of Chicago, and we decided to sleep out on a kind of a sleeping porch. It was windows all the way around, but it was up high, and there was a very severe storm, in, as they happened in Chicago, and I woke up thinking I was back on the battlefield, and I practically ran out of the place. But and I realized that no, I'm not there. It's a safe place for me to be, and my wife was sleeping alongside me, and my son was in his crib right next to us, and they were all okay. And so I said, well, to myself, I said, it's okay.
Again, thank the Lord for that. Before we get to another break here, and I do want to mention that we're going to try to save a little time at the end of the program for your phone calls at 490-5858 or toll-free 800-776-5858. Maybe you have a question for Dr. Stan about his book. That book, again, Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat, and I will tell you where you can get it in just a little bit. Before we hit this commercial break, though, Dr. Stan, I want to ask you about the experience that I guess you could say was the critical point of your service during the war and really set the course for the rest of your life in a roundabout way. Certainly not the way you planned it out, but there's a saying I've heard from a lot of veterans when you're in the Army, and they'll say it in the Navy or the Marine Corps too, never volunteer for anything. Mm-hmm. You made that mistake, didn't you?
Sure did. And that's what ended my war experience, that particular incident. It wasn't nearly as scary as the incident I've just described. It was just a plain field with a kind of in a pasture, and cows were grazing on the field, and it looked like it was a perfectly quiet place. But in the middle of the field were a couple of GIs, and they were blown up. This was a minefield, and the whole thing was mined because it was a gap in the Hurtgen Forest, and the one to stop all the equipment from going through there, so it was mined. And I don't know why we did this, really, but I think we felt that we should go ahead and try to save those kids that were there.
Especially as a medic, that was one of your duties, to tend to the wounded, and here they are wounded in the middle of a minefield. And I'm going to stop you right there as we hit this commercial. When we come back, you'll hear how far he made it into that minefield, what the result of it was, and how it's changed the rest of his life and helped contribute to the book that we're talking about. You're listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to the show. We will get to your phone calls in about 10 minutes or so at 490-5858 or toll-free 800-776-5858. Again, a reminder, it's a little different this week. Not the same veteran on TV as radio on CBS 47 tonight at 6. It'll be Pearl Harbor survivor Mike Kerkorian, who's 91. Dr. Stan Lindquist is only 90. He just celebrated his birthday 2 weeks ago. And of all those 90 years, there's one day that stands out in his mind, and that's where we left him before that break. On the edge of a minefield in Germany's Hurtgen Forest, two soldiers were injured in the middle of that minefield, and you and another young medic volunteered to go out and try to bring them back.
Right. Well, anyway, we we stood there, and I really wondered, you know, this seems kind of a stupid thing to do, and I really was, my knees were pretty shaky. But somehow it seemed to me that, as I remembered a verse from the scriptures, that giving your life for another person is a great thing to do.
Greater love hath no man.
Right.
Lay down his life for his friend.
Right, exactly the thing. And that seemed to give me some strength. And also there were some other scriptures that came to mind. But at any rate, we decided then that we would go. The fellow with me was just a young man. He just got out of college. So he was quite a bit younger than I. I was an old man. I'd graduated from college for some time. Had worked for a couple of years at teaching school. But at any rate, we went on out, and we were able to find a way by looking where the ground had been disturbed. We could tell where they'd hidden the mines, the anti-personnel mines. That was the ones that are hard. The big mines, we could avoid them because we could step on them and it wouldn't make any difference anyway. But then we got out about 100 yards or maybe more in the field, and suddenly we couldn't find a way. And so we came together. Normally, we always stayed at least 20 feet apart so that if one got blown up, then the other one could help out. Well, in this case, we were trying to decide what to do. And so we figured it out, and I said, I think we could go right this way. And the young man, McGee, Herschel McGee, his name was, he said that afterwards, he said he moved his foot a quarter of an inch or a half an inch or whatever. Anyway, a short distance, and he blew up a mine. And that set off three different mines, one directly under him, which blew off part of his foot. Another one a little further away was the one that shattered my feet and my ankles and leg. And the one that he set off blew up into my face. So it had locked one of my eyes, hit out one of the eyes, and I was picking shrapnel out of my face for years afterwards, it seemed like. But anyway, we both got blown up into the air. In just a second, our service time was over. So then from that on, I had to spend about 9 months in the hospital. I couldn't walk or anything.
And you couldn't see. You lost your right eye, and even your left eye, you couldn't see for how long?
Oh, about 3-4 weeks, as I remember it. You know, it might sometimes things are a little foggy. But as I remember it, that's about how long it was.
What was the first thing you remember after the mine went up? What was the next moment of consciousness for you?
Well, the next time was when we were going to the hospital in the ambulance, which was really an old truck that had been fixed up with some beds in it, stretchers, what it amounted to.
Did you know what had happened to you, or did they have to explain it to you?
I just knew that something had happened bad, and I knew that I couldn't walk because I couldn't move my legs. I think I could move them a little bit, but I couldn't stand on them. And when Hirsch had called for a tourniquet, I was able to find a tourniquet or belt out of my aid kit and threw it to him. So I was awake to that extent, and I also knew that it was going to be awful painful, although it wasn't then. So I got out a shot for deadening the pain, and I squeezed it, jabbed it in my leg and squeezed it, and it wouldn't go out, and then finally it just broke and dribbled all over my hand because I'd forgotten to puncture it to begin with.
And you're doing all of this blind?
Yeah, without seeing anything. And anyway, I was trying my best to do something, and then I passed out, I guess, because I don't remember much at all from there on until we got in an ambulance, and that was a horrible experience. It was a rough riding thing. I tell you, they didn't have very good springs on those things.
Did you think at that point that you would ever walk again, that you would ever see again? What was going through your mind?
Well, I really didn't realize how badly injured I was, because my legs didn't show an awful lot, you know. I mean, I didn't have any blown off like Herschel did. Mine just looked sort of normal. They looked a little bruised and misshapen, but as far as that was concerned, I had no idea. In fact, I was really afraid that I was going to get well and had to come back again.
Yeah. That would not be an issue for you.
It wasn't. But at any rate, so when we got to the field hospital, then they bandaged the one eye. Evidently, they fixed put some stitches in my left eye. And the right eye, they said, well, it's impossible anyway. You may never see in that one. And they were right, because I never could see anything with that eye. So eventually they had to take it out. But so now I have a plastic eye, which functions so well that some people don't know me for years and don't even know I have a plastic eye.
Until you pop it out and show it to them.
Huh? That's right.
That gets your attention a little bit.
It sure does. But anyway, so that's about where the end of my war experiences was.
And one of the things that really struck me when I was reading through all these letters initially, before this book ever came out, but your son was kind enough to give me copies of all the letters you had sent for the Evangelical Beacon newsletter, the Serviceman's Page, and I know he was able to find all of those in their archives in Chicago, which was a great help. You actually wrote several editions of that column ahead of time, before you were injured, just for that possibility. So they're publishing all these, and then at some point you come to a note that says, Private Buck was injured. They'd never given your name until this point. Then they put a picture of you. It says it's PFC, Stanley Lindquist. Then you have all these people who are praying for you. You start writing again after that. You end up touring the country, going to all these churches, trying to raise money for Gold Star Memorial Funds to honor those who gave their lives in the service. This just seems like a whirlwind period in your life, and here you still have a family at home, too. Mm-hmm. What was your sense at that point of what was in store for you? What did you think was going to lie ahead at that point?
Well, I really didn't know. I applied for admission to the University of Chicago psychology department in the graduate school, which was in the biological sciences. And I didn't know it then, but I was admitted. But later I found out that there were about 2,000 others that had applied, and 16 were accepted, and I was one of the 16. And that had to be God's intervention, because there was no way I could have gotten in there any other way.
Well, you had quite a bit of experience at beating the odds already.
So. Yeah, that's true. So that I was just, you know, trying to get ready, and I wasn't really aware of what I was getting ready for. All I knew was that I couldn't go back to any of my old jobs. I was absolutely kind of devastated when I sat in the hospital one day and said, what am I going to be doing with my life? Because I can't walk much, and I can't do anything that I did before. I couldn't farm like I did a little bit. I couldn't teach. I couldn't be an inspector, because you had to walk so much, and I couldn't do that. So I was really up against it, as many servicemen are even now. They say, where are we going to go? But I took advantage of taking an inventory of my life and what's went going on, and I realized that I had something that was irreplaceable, and that was God. And I felt He was guiding me and directing me. I didn't know how, but somehow He was.
Well, and you would eventually become a part of the psychology faculty at Fresno State. And at one point you decided that you were going to branch out and do something on your own. Out of your home, I believe, initially, you started ministering to missionaries. And you had been on the battlefield. They were in the mission field. You realized that they go through a lot of things and that their faith is shaken at times. At that point, I know you had no idea what it would turn into, but you just wanted to do something good for people. What was your original idea? Why did you think that was your calling?
Well, I think that it came directly from them, because they asked for it. You know, they said, what can we do? How can we reorient our lives, because we have these problems? And of course, with my background that I was gradually learning in the field of psychology, I thought, you know, this is really what God's prepared me for, huh? Maybe that's it. So that after, it was 7 years after I graduated and I moved to Fresno State. I was teaching at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and this college at the same time. And the missionaries came to me there. And then when I left there and went to Fresno State, I started a part-time private practice after a while. I asked Dr. Doyle, was the president, you know, about that. He said, well, he said, you're allowed to do a certain amount of time, but you can't have it take over your life.
Little did he know.
You know, 10, 12 hours a week is about the limit. And so when the missionaries came, I thought, well, now maybe this is the area I should specialize in. And they really were the ones that pushed me into it. And I had no idea what was going to happen or how it was going to grow. And I have no idea that, you know, right now, we've had over 8,000 family members and people in our program who have been living on our campus. Our campus, we have 104 apartments, and some of them are completely refurnished, so the missionary can come just with their suitcase and take care of themselves get the help they need.
And now I could tell our listeners where they can get the book, because if you want the book, right now, the only place you can get it is the Link Care Center, which is on Shaw Avenue near West. It's right by the Denny's there at Shaw and West, just north of that. The phone number is 439-4920. The wholesale price on this book is just $10. This is Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat. If there are any retailers listening that might want to pick the book up in their stores, too, I'm sure Dr. Stan would be open to those kind of ideas. But for right now, you can get it at the Link Care Center, which is the largest organization of its kind, caring for missionaries and pastoral staff around the world. And that Link Care Center, which is now at Shaw and West in Fresno, is what grew out of what you started in your house, just trying to minister to a few missionaries and encourage them and help them keep on their calling. Obviously, you had no idea it would turn into what it is today.
No, I'm just, every time I drive down to the place, I think, what has God wrought, you know what?
Samuel F. B. Morse.
Yeah, yep. Right. So, because obviously it couldn't be one person be able to do this, because unless God was in it, it wouldn't happen. And because he's in it, then it does happen. And so then I was able to get recruit some help from a lot of other folks gradually. It was hard at the beginning because psychology was considered by some strong Christians as being sort of the work of the devil, because it's working with your mind or something. I'm not sure what they'd be thinking, but something like that. And there weren't too many people who, first of all, who had the qualifications that we needed, because we had to have a proper degrees, PhD preferably, and master's degrees, and with the ability to get a license.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting a license was important to get the insurance, and most of the missionaries had insurance, and that's really what's keeping us going. Very, very few people are willing to contribute much to this. We think, you know, God should take care of them without having any man getting involved in it. So that's the attitude. It's expressed sometimes, but mostly it's not expressed. But at any rate, so that's really the most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me.
Well, and I know that it's been a blessing to many people, not just here in the Valley, but really around the world, with the missionaries who have benefited from the services of the Link Care Center. And again, that's where you can get the book. That's at Shaw and West at the Link Care Center offices there. The phone number, if you want to call, 439-4920. As we hit this final commercial break, I also want to tell you, one of our previous guests on this program, Gus Zernial, we talked about the Slugger's book, Ozark Ike, Tales of the Fence Buster Gus Zernial. His book, he now has a website where you can buy it. That's GusZernial.com. If you want to check that out, you can order the book online. Those special edition copies, one for each of his 237 homers, those are sold out. But the regular hardcover edition for $25 is available at GusZernial.com. We'll talk more about Dr. Stan Lindquist's book and maybe take a few of your phone calls at 490-5858 or 800-776-5858 when Hometown Heroes continues on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
We come down the home stretch on this edition of Hometown Heroes, our weekly salute to the men and women who have kept our country free through their service and sacrifice, primarily during World War II, because World War II veterans are dying in this country at a rate of more than 1,000 a day. It's between 1 and 2,000, depending on who you ask. So there's an urgency there to preserve the stories, their experiences, the things that many of them never talked about when they came home, and some are talking about today. We've been able to talk to Dr. Stan Lindquist for this hour. We've talked about his book, Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat. It is written from the Christian perspective, but whether or not you're a Christian, I think you'll enjoy this book for its historical value. And it's not only the things that you wrote from the front back in the 1940s, Dr. Stan, but you've gone back and added a few things here in the 21st century. What are some of those additions, and why did you think it was important to kind of set the context there?
Well, one of the things that happens when you're writing from the front is that there's a censor that gets involved, and he takes out anything that might relate to what's going on, which is part of his job.
Sure.
So you couldn't say much about where you were. So now I went back, and first of all, I had to set up an introduction so we could set up the setting for the whole thing. And then I put on, in addition to that, some places where a little explanation seemed to be helpful to just carry the story along, as well as the article letters, so that gave me an opportunity to just fill out the details. And then the appendices, I have a couple of those, which tells both the experience that I had, which I've discussed briefly, as well as the final injury that ended the war for me, because those parts, of course, had to be written afterwards, and some of them have been updated, and so that parts of it are relatively recent, but the most of it is, as you said, 60 years old.
And I'm sure that when you were blown up, in your words, in that German minefield, blown up into the air, losing your right eye, losing part of your leg, you didn't think you were going to see your 90th birthday, let alone be publishing a book at age 90, but here you are today. I do want to ask you, though, about those injuries. What are the lingering effects of what happened to you in the Hürtgen Forest so many years ago?
Well, of course, having only one eye changes my perspective totally, and I'll reach out for something and I'll be off it a little bit. Reaching for a glass, sometimes I'll hit the middle of it and knock the glass over instead of picking it up. That's one of the things. Then the other thing is, as far as my walking is concerned, of course, I'm somewhat unstable, and especially in walking longer distances, I get to a point I can't walk at all, and my legs hurt all the time, very badly. So that is the main thing that I have to compete with or deal with at the present time.
And with all that said, I have a feeling that I know what your answer will be if I ask you, would you change anything that happened to you while you were serving our country?
Well, I don't think I can, and I won't, because if I were doing it over again, maybe I'd be a little more enthusiastic about some aspects of it. That's always a possibility, but my wife used to say, don't you wish you could live your life over again? And I said, oh, my goodness, I'm not sure.
You're pretty thankful for the way it's all worked out, aren't you?
Regardless, it worked out according to God's plan, maybe not called mine, and went way beyond mine, my views or whatever. So that certainly is true, yes.
Well, I'm very thankful for that. And again, the book, if you're interested, is Letters from Private Buck, Devotionals from World War II Combat, all those things that Dr. Stan wrote from the front more than 60 years ago, with a few of his comments updated for the 21st century. You can get it by going to the Link Care Center on Shaw Avenue, just east of West, if that makes sense. That's 1734 West Shaw. The phone number there is 439-4920. We've got about a minute left in the show here, Dr. Stan.
I mentioned that it's $10. It's
$10.
Low price.
Yeah. That's the wholesale price for the book, $10, that you can get there at the Link Care Center. Any quick nuggets that you would like to share with our listeners that maybe I didn't give you an opportunity to share about what it meant for you to serve our country and what makes you proud about that today?
Well, one of the things I think that we all feel is that somehow we're very fortunate to live in a country like we do. And if we have anything that we can do to do something about it, that's something that we ought to do. I sometimes think that task has been overblown. I get the feeling that, You have things the way you have them just because of what we did, but I'm not sure that I feel that way.
Well, I definitely do, and unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you for your service to our country. Thank you for this book, and thank you at home for listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.